Good afternoon. It's nice to be here. You do believe that it's because of you that I'm here, right? Or is it two little granddaughters and a son and a daughter-in-law? Let me get this going. This is a sermon. I usually like to have, we're on if you guys are. I usually like to have a limit of 15 verses for a sermon. However, I cannot do it for this one. And so I hope you're able to get it up there. I'm not going to be able to give this sermon. There's just no way to do it. There are too many verses. Here. We're plugged in. There we are. Look at that. All right. Okay. I have a handout, and if you didn't get one, you can get one afterward. It has all the verses. Well, raise your hand if you... I have enough, I think, for one per family. I brought just a little over 100 copies. I don't know what your attendance is here. It looks like you're maybe a little above 100. So I have 101 copies. So that, and you don't need it now, actually. It just gives all the verses and some of the quotes. So we're going to be in such a rush to give this, to finish on time, that... you don't have to go through your Bible. You don't have to take a lot of notes. And that's the reason I have the handout. I went to, Lucretia and I have been going to Africa since the 80s. And we first went to the Feast of Tabernacles in 1990 to Ghana. And this sermon was inspired by one of the Ghanaians. He said something that would not be politically correct here. But he came up to me and he said, in the West African accent, "Mistakellas, we know that black men cannot govern themselves." You could not say that here. But that is commonly understood in Africa. Many of them feel that way. So I didn't disagree with him. I said, "I think you're right." But I said, "I don't think white men can govern themselves. I don't think any human beings can govern themselves." Now this, I put this sermon together at that feast, and I've added to it since then. God has not made any race inferior. Just like, I mean, what's God's favorite dog? I think he, or cat, or a flower. But you know, people have different strengths, even in the same race. Some are tall, some are short. some men have hair, some don't. We're all a little different. Some people are more happy and friendly. Some people are maybe more intelligent. Sometimes people feel that they're superior or they're inferior. If you go to India, they have caste system. Some castes think they're superior. But different races at different times have felt themselves to be superior. Some looked down on Asians at one time. Of course, the Japanese looked down on everybody else at one time as being inferior, as did the Chinese. But God has not made any race inferior, nor has He made any of them superior. However, they each have different strengths and weaknesses. And I want to talk about Africa in prophecy and honor the God who made all races. Now let's see if I can get this working here. The first principle I want us to understand is in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 26 through 29. I won't repeat a lot of these, but it says, "For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things that are, which are mighty. Now some things are weaker. And God chooses the weaker instead of the mighty. You know, sometimes it's weaker according to the opinion of the world. Base things of the world, things which are despised, God has chosen. And the things which are not to bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in His presence. Now that is an important principle to understand. God cannot use the mighty, or not many, noble. Now there may be, it says not many that are like that. Not many noble. As a matter of fact, there may be somebody noble in this room. Maybe you. But the rest of us aren't. And no flesh should glory. God uses the weak and the base. He chooses them. And that's a general principle, that God has to do that. You know, if he chose the powerful, what would they say? Oh, God chose me because I'm so smart and so strong and so wise and so great. And then the glory would be in flesh instead of God. And here's another principle, and that is Daniel chapter 2, verse 34 to 35. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay, and broke them in pieces. That little stone that was cut out is Jesus Christ. He didn't come as the mighty, did he? He wasn't born to a mighty family. He was born into the family of a carpenter. God couldn't use the great. I mean, he didn't have a great king be his physical father and a great queen as his physical mother. But when God is going to do something, often he starts small, with something small. And it becomes great because of God, not because of man. Anyway, this little stone that is Jesus Christ smites this image that is the mighty empires of Satan in Daniel 2. And this great statue that they saw with the head of gold and then the silver and the bronze and then the legs and feet of iron. And those were four empires. But it was all one image. It was just continuing Satan's rule through these empires. They were strong. They were mighty. But it was the little stone cut out without hands that strikes them. It says that it strikes them on the feet. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone, so the little stone that is Jesus Christ and the kingdom of God that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. That's the way God's things work out. By the way, can you all see that in the back? Is this clear? Okay, I wondered if the lights were too bright. Good. Now, warning, some speculation. So those who might hear this later and not see this, there are a lot of things I'm going to go through that are strongly biblically proved, but I want to just give a little speculation for you. Sometimes speculation is the most interesting part of the sermon anyway, right? This may be the only part you remember. Well, let me go back just a second. About a third of human history is before the flood. And yet there are just a few little chapters to tell about 2,000 years before the flood. And so everything in those chapters is compressed. And you don't have a lot of detail. So everything that's in there had to be important to God to put it in. How many women are named before the flood? How many women? Did anybody happen to know? I wouldn't expect you to. Now, you know the name of one woman, right? Before the flood. Surely, anybody think of one woman? Eve, thank you. Eve. Well, here are three others. And they're all in the line of Cain. This is the line of Cain. And Lamech took unto him two wives. First mention of anybody taking more than one wife. The name of one was Adah, the name of the other, Zillah. And Adah bare Jabal. He was the father of such as dwell in tents and of such as have cattle. And his brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all such as handle the harp and organ. And Zillah, that's one of the two wives. I've made that bold there. She also bare Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every artificer in brass and iron, and the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. So here we have three women mentioned, Adah, Zillah, and Zillah's daughter is Naamah. So two wives, Adah and Zillah, and the daughter of Zillah, the sister of Tubal-Cain, was Naamah. Now why did God put them in? We don't know. We don't know. But we can speculate. The word Zillah, and this is in your notes, the handout, is a feminine word derived from Salal, a word that means shadow or dark. The New Brown Driver Briggs Gesenius Hebrew Aramaic English Lexicon, boy, what a name! That's considered the definitive lexicon. Do any of you happen to have one of those? Well, I just see one man raise his hand back there. This is a man, and it has been expanded, who he was German. He went through all of the Aramaic and Hebrew usage in and out of the Bible and put together this lexicon. But it says this on page 853. Says that similar Arabic words mean black and shade. A similar Ethiopic word means dark. I'll give you an example of the Hebrew where word is used. Nehemiah 13:19. So it was at the gates of Jerusalem, as it began to be dark, Salal, before the Sabbath. By the way, you may have heard some people trying to say the Sabbath doesn't start till sunrise. Have any of you heard that? Well, this verse proves it starts at sunset right there. But anyway, the word is dark. Now, this is a woman, Zillah, whose name, dark. Was she dark? That would be just speculation. But her name was Dark. She was named Dark. Now I want to go back to that same verse we had, Genesis 4, verses 19 and 22. And now I have bolded the name Naamah, that is Zillah's daughter, the sister of Tubal-Cain. What about Naamah? Who is she? Why would she be mentioned? If we go to the Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown commentary and look up at this location, Naamah, it says there, its transmission to the time of Moses may be accounted for if we accept the tradition that Naamah, the daughter of Lamech, became the wife of Ham. Now, that's Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. That's a tradition, a Jewish tradition, that Naamah, the daughter of Dark, was on the ark. However, earlier tradition was that she was not the wife of Ham, but she was the wife of Noah. And that many of the Jewish rabbis and such did not want to have her to be the a daughter of Cain, to be the wife of Noah. So they said, well, she was on the boat, but she was really the wife of Ham. And it's through Ham that we get dark races. Anyway, notice in Wikipedia, what could be more authoritative than Wikipedia? Now we're getting some real solid meat. Wikipedia, Naamah, a woman identified in the Midrash Genesis Rabbath as the wife of Noah. And if you're maybe if you get my facetious comment about Wikipedia, which I love, frankly. If you go to the Jewish Encyclopedia, now that's pretty authoritative. It says this, according to Abba Bar Kahana, Naamah was Noah's wife and was called Naamah, which means pleasant, because her conduct was pleasing to God. It didn't matter what race she was in. Out of every race, those who please God are making God happy. She was pleasant. Now, I said this is some speculation, but one way or the other, the speculation is that she was on the boat and that her mother was named Dark. Was she dark? I said this is speculation. However, we can go, this is the end of most of the speculation. There is a little more speculation, if you don't mind. I want to go to Genesis 10 and verse 1. And let's read about the children, those who were on the boat, the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, those guys were on the boat. And I want to look at Ham specifically. It says in Genesis 10 and verse 6, and the sons of Ham, and it'll name them here, Cush and Mitzrayim and Phut, or sometimes that's spelled Put in the Bible. He's only mentioned seven times in the Bible. And sometimes it's translated Libya. And Canaan. So here are the four sons that are mentioned right here of Ham. Now, why didn't God choose any of these for the covenant to go through? It went through Shem. He was listed first, even though he wasn't the oldest. And God often didn't use the oldest. Listed him first because the covenant went through him. Apparently, Japheth was the oldest. It says Japheth the elder. But God, in choosing, rarely used the firstborn. If you think about it, Abraham was not the firstborn. God didn't use his firstborn, Isaac. Ishmael. He chose Isaac. God did not choose the oldest of Isaac's children. And then he chose, he didn't choose the oldest of Israel's children. So God usually did not choose the oldest, the firstborn. God can't always use the ones who think, well, I'm the big guy. I'm the firstborn. So I want to look at these. First of all, I want to look at the last one named as Canaan. Was he a weak man? Were his descendants weak? Well, remember when the children of Israel sent spies, they said, we can't overcome Canaan. Why, we're like grasshoppers to them. And their cities are built up and they're strong and they're mighty. So Canaan was not weak at all. The spies said they were mighty. Only Joshua and Caleb said God could defeat them. Notice, by the way, people say, well, do you think that the curse on Canaan is what has caused Africa to have all of its problems? And I say, no. You know, Canaanites didn't live in Africa. They lived where? You know, this is a question like, where is Grant? Who's buried in Grant's tomb? This sort of goes along with it. Where were the children of Canaan? In the land of Canaan. Yes, thank you. In the land of Canaan. Where was the land of Canaan? It's where Israel is. That's not Africa. And if you go to the inscriptions on the tombs and the temples in Egypt, and they will show Canaanites that have been captured. And they show them with ropes and they're coming in. They've got these pointed beards and funny hats. But they are coming in as slaves having been conquered. They are swarthy, not black. Now there are on the Egyptian tombs pictures of those who came from the south. And they call it upper. Strange for us, it's Upper Egypt because it's higher in elevation. But it's to the south. And boy, they are black. They are black. So Canaan became a slave when the Israelites came into that land. He's not the father of the black races, even though his brother, and maybe two brothers. Mitzrayim, it's listed there. Whenever you see the word Egypt in the Old Testament, the Hebrew word is Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the father of the Egyptians. Now, were they weak as a race? They were one of the great empires. But you know, like all of Satan's great empires, the end result is degeneracy. God chooses those who seem to be weak. But Satan chooses those who are strong. Satan likes the strong. Those are the ones he can use. So the Canaanites, he built them up. And then Egypt became a great empire. He could use them. They were not weak, and they were not black either. They were swarthy. But maybe two of the brothers we can discuss. First of all, Cush. That was one of the other brothers. Cush means black. And it's usually translated Ethiopia. Now, the area of Ethiopia, the people there were black. By the way, you can look up Cush if you want to look it up in historians' writings. They will call the people there Cush, only they usually spell it with a K. K-U-S-H. They wouldn't want to use what the Bible had, so they just, same name. But the people of Ethiopia were descendants of Cush, and usually translated, although they migrated south too. Hebrew name for Ethiopia, Abyssinia, Nubia, and Sudan, uniformly translated Ethiopia in the Septuagint. The Hebrew word Cush means black, according to, now not every lexicon wants to do it. I don't know if they're being politically correct, but if you look in Easton's Bible Dictionary, the online Bible, Nelson Bible Dictionary, and the Biblical Cyclopedic Index and the Open Bible, they all say that the word Cush means black. And of course, that's the area of Cush was translated Ethiopia, south of Egypt. And they were, to say the least, very, very black. And migrated south. The skin of the Cush was distinctive. It says, Jeremiah 13, verse 23a, that means just the first part, can the Ethiopian, and the Hebrew word there is Cush, change his skin, or the leopard his spots? Now, he's not putting down the Ethiopian's dark skin, because he mentions the leopard is spots. Leopards are beautiful. The skin of leopards is beautiful. And I think black is beautiful. So, take that. Now, put or foot. It's the Hebrew name for Libya or North Africa. However, they didn't seem to stay there. Josephus says Libya. However, they could have been driven further south in Africa. North Africa was ravaged by Phoenicians, who founded Carthage beginning in the 9th century, and later by Greeks, Romans, and others, came into that area and fought with the Carthaginians. The Carthaginians sold black slaves, gold, ivory, and precious stones to Greece, Italy, and all Europe. So even though Put was originally there, apparently in North Africa, it wasn't. So you got three of these sons, Mitzrayim, Put, and Cush, all living in Africa. But only one of them is listed for sure as being black. We don't know about Put. There has been speculation that Put was also black, like his brother Cush, and he was driven by the Phoenicians, but he went down the west coast of Africa, whereas Cush went down the east coast of Africa. So we really don't know much about Put, other than the fact that it does mention that they did fight in the Egyptian armies sometimes. They were part of their mercenaries. Other than that, we don't know. But we know about Cush. Cush, very clear. Notice in Genesis chapter 10, verses 7 through 10. It says, and the sons of Cush. Now, his name meant black, and he was in Ethiopia, so he was black. Notice some of the names, Seba and Havilah. You know, it mentions there's gold in Havilah. And it certainly was a lot of gold. There's a lot of gold in Africa. And Sabta and Ramah. Now, I bolded the name Ramah because he's mentioned in prophecy. The others, not so much. And Sabteca and the sons of Ramah. Now, notice it specifically gives you the sons of one of these. So these are the grandsons of Cush. And Sheba and Dedan, they are mentioned commonly in prophecy. I shouldn't say commonly. They are mentioned in prophecy, Sheba and Dedan. And the queen of Sheba, of course, mentioned. It says, and here's another one, but it doesn't mention him. Apparently, he had no children. And Cush begot Nimrod. Now, could God use Nimrod? No, but Satan could, because he was strong. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Before the Lord actually meant they put him in front of the Lord in the Hebrew. And there are different ones that explain that. But he was a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom. Now these are not God's kingdoms. These are Satan's kingdoms. Beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calna in the land of Shinar. So he is mentioned as having reintroduced paganism that had been before the flood, that he reintroduced it after the flood and brought it in. And the tradition is that Shem had war with him and killed him, and he had no children. And so it's not listed anywhere in his genealogy. Now, there is another Sheba and Dedan. Don't know if any of you realize that. Anybody happen to realize there's another Sheba and Dedan that was many generations later? That is Abraham, something like eight generations later. He had children with Keturah, and he sent them to the east. He didn't send them to the south. Now, they're very close. The south and the east really meet very closely. Arabia was called east, and Africa was called south, but they actually come very close together and can be right where Djibouti is. In Africa, is just across from Yemen. But he sent his children there, and one of them had children that he named Sheba and Dedan. And you'd say, well, why is it such a coincidence that this son of Abraham, who was in Arabia, named his son Sheba and Dedan? Well, what was just across the straits there? Just across the strait, where is this mighty empire from many generations earlier? And they were called Sheba and Dedan. So that was a great name of people who were just across the water there. I'm talking about down at the bottom of the Red Sea, where it's very close together. The queen of the south, Jesus said. It didn't say of the east. So where did the queen of Sheba come from? Was south. Was probably black. Surely would have been, as Sheba. She'll rise up in the judgment with this generation. She'll condemn it. For she came from the uttermost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, a greater than Solomon is here. Now, there is another speculation that I don't know that is true at all. But if you remember, she brought a lot of things to Solomon, gave him gold and ivory and all kinds of nice things from Africa. But he offered to give her whatever she asked for. Well, the tradition, this is a fact, the tradition in Ethiopia is that she asked for a son of the wisest, from the wisest man on earth. And we don't know that's true. Dr. Hay, I've heard, said that couldn't be true because she was 90 years old at the time. But I don't know, maybe she was strong. But it is still a tradition. I'll show you that. The New Bible Dictionary says this. This queen is enshrined in Ethiopian legends. particularly the Kibra Nagast, which means glory of kings, the kings. As the queen of Ethiopia, who bore by Solomon, the first king of Ethiopia, Josephus calls her queen of Egypt and Ethiopia and queen of Ethiopia in Antiquities, book 8, chapter 6, paragraphs 5 and 6. So the queen of Sheba would have been from that empire that was down there that descended a grandson of Ham or Cush. I should say. Now, I want to once again say, Satan's societies start great, but the end result is degeneracy. Egypt became degenerate. Canaan became degenerate. Nubia, North Africa, and Ghana. Got to throw that in because I first gave this for Ghana. And that Lucretia and I are going back to Ghana for the Feast of Tabernacles, Ghana and Togo. There's a curse on most of this world. Isn't that obvious? There's a curse on most of this world following Satan. Food is cursed. Disease, weather, insects, animals. And the greatest curse is leaders with beast-like minds. There's always some civil war going on in Africa. That's sad. The tsetse fly, malaria, which I've had. Not fun. African bees. You know, we worry about the Africanized bees. They're really bad. Boy, they'll sting you. Where's it come from? Africa. Great curse on most of this world. Now, Israel has been blessed. You know, the United States, British Commonwealth has been blessed because of the obedience of Abraham. Not because we are greater. West Nile virus or fever comes from, where's the Nile? Africa. But those things are moving to us because this nation, our nation, is so forgetting God and His ways that we're going down. God will bless Israel every now and then because of the promise to Abraham. And then they rise up, they get sinful, God crushes them. Then the promise of Abraham, He brings them back. And the final bringing back is going to be when Jesus returns. God called Israel because they were not the great of the earth. That's an important, remember we brought that out first? God can't use the strong. I'm not saying He can't use anyone who's strong, but it's just a general principle that He normally can't. In Deuteronomy 7, in verse 1, in fact, this may be more than one verse there. When the Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess and has cast out many nations before you, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you. God chose the slave nation. And then Deuteronomy 7, verse 3 and 4. Nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take your daughter for your son. For they will turn your sons away from following me. It wasn't racial. It was religious. The problem was God disagrees with interreligious marriage, not interracial marriage. And I'll bring some examples of that. To serve other gods, so the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. That's the problem with interracial marriage. I want to give you an example. You know, there is a Canaanite blood. There was Canaanite blood in Jesus. There was Canaanite blood in David. Notice Matthew chapter 1. Verse 5 and 6. And this is the genealogy of Jesus. Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. We know Rahab. She was Canaanite. At Jericho. Boaz, who was a very righteous man, married Ruth, You remember that? Mentioned in the book of Ruth, Boaz, this righteous individual. And his mother was Rahab, a Canaanite. So he was half Canaanite. And that would mean that Obed was 1/4 Canaanite. And Obed begot Jesse, who was 1/8 Canaanite. And Jesse begot David, who the king, who was 1/16 Canaanite. And there's no problem with having Canaanite blood. Or having blood from, you know, any individual. Doesn't matter. David the king begot Solomon by her who had been the wife of Uriah. Here's another example of interracial marriage. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman. Now, the word Ethiopian in the Hebrew there is Cush. It means black. Or the black woman he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman. Now, I said there might be a little more speculation. The speculation is this was his first wife. And it even worked its way into the movie, The Ten Commandments. Don't know if you remember this, but you see, he had been 40 years old when he fled Egypt. And he had been a prince. He was the son of a princess. So he would be a prince. And the history that they have is that he was the general who conquered Ethiopia. It was conquered at about the time that Moses would be there, is when Egypt conquered Ethiopia. And so the way they would sign an eventual peace treaty is that they would have a prince marry a princess. And that was a common form of a peace treaty, that they would make a peace treaty and then they would have a marriage, and a prince of one country would marry the princess from another one, and this would finalize it. And then, of course, the Egyptians would say, of course, we're ruling at that particular time. And it worked its way into the movie, The Ten Commandments. Now, I wonder if anybody here will remember this. Charlton Heston was in the throne room of the Pharaoh, and they had conquered Ethiopia, and they brought in a princess, a black woman, from Ethiopia. I mean, in the story, it's a movie. And she was kind of scantily dressed, and she made eyes at Moses, Charlton Heston, and looked at him, and it made this other woman who liked Moses a little jealous. How many of you happen to remember that scene from the Ten Commandments? Well, there you go. That's where it came from. That could have been his first wife. And what happened was he fled at age 40. He went out to Midian. He married a Midianite woman. And then he came back, and remember, a mixed multitude went out, that his wife was still alive, still there, and she went with him this time. She didn't flee with him when he was 40, but when he's 80 and he took them out, that she went with him. And it didn't say that he married her at this time, that he had married. I said there might be a little more speculation. That could have been his first wife back before he was converted. Genesis 41, verses 50 to 52. And to Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Now this is an Egyptian woman. So she would have been a Mitzrayim. So she would have also been a descendant of Ham. And Joseph married an Egyptian. She would have had to accept his religion in order for her to do that, for him to marry her, because he was a very righteous man, as you recall. And he had two children. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God has made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. The name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. They were half Egyptian. So those of us who are of Manasseh or of Ephraim, and we've got a little Egyptian blood in us, a little Hamitic blood. So you can work on your pyramids and things like that. Deuteronomy 7, verses 14 through 15. Here's what he says. Now here he called the weak Israel. But he says this to them. You shall be blessed above all peoples. Doesn't say you're the smartest. He says you'll be blessed above all peoples. There shall not be a male or female barren among you or among your livestock. And the Lord will take away from you all sickness and will afflict you with none of the terrible diseases of Egypt which you have known. But will lay them on those who all those who hate you. You see, it isn't that that Israel is smarter, more capable. It's the blessing of God that He's going to take away again and make us slaves again as a nation. Maybe not you and me. I'm 72, so I may just sleep through the whole thing. And yeah, that would be the good way. That's taking the shortcut to the kingdom, is to just sleep. But anyway, lay them on all those who hate you. So disease has a lot to do with obedience to God. And those nations that Satan has chosen sometimes end up with... They're under a curse. It's not that they're inferior. They're just under a curse. Deuteronomy 8, verses 11 through 14. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping His commandments, His judgments, and His statutes, which I command you today, lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. And we say, boy, by my hand. Well, I did all this. In Deuteronomy 8, verses 17 through 18. Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you power to get wealth, that He may establish His covenant, which He swore to your fathers, as it is this day. And we've lost our wealth. We're the greatest debtor nation that has ever existed. And the British aren't far behind us and many others. Australia is still doing fairly well. Deuteronomy 9, verse 1. He repeats what he said earlier. Hear, O Israel, you are to pass over Jordan this day to go in to possess nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities great and fenced up to heaven. So although there is a curse on most of this world, God spares Israel at times. And as I said, many of the Gentiles, the greatest curse the Gentiles have had is their leadership. Many Gentile leaders have beast-like minds. You know, when it shows the empires that are the Gentile empires back in Daniel and such, they're depicted as animals. Wild beasts, lions and bears. So, China, have the leaders in China been a great blessing, going back to the emperors and Mao, Zedong and such? I'd say they've been a great curse. They're doing a little better right now. How about Japan? And I mentioned here Tojo, and I find this funny. How many of you even know who Tojo is? Well, just a few. So all of you young folks, the ruler in Japan at the time of World War II, the one who led Japan to conquer China, to expand the empire, to conquer Korea, to send out the message, climb Mount Nataka. Anybody out and even remember climb Mount Nataka? Okay, there's a couple there who remember that. Nataka Yama. Anyway, that was the signal to attack Pearl Harbor. The one who sent it was Tojo. Tojo was actually the ruler of Japan. He was the military ruler of Japan who led them into all of that and built up Japan militarily. Now, was he a blessing? I went to Japan in the 40s as an army brat, visited, and I'll tell you, he was not a blessing for Japan. Or Hitler. I went to Germany in 53. There were still bombed out buildings. I was there 53, 54, and 55. And was Hitler a great blessing for that country? He left it devastated. Idi Amin, some of you may remember him. Somalia right now, are their leaders a great blessing? North Korea, the leader is a great blessing. No, these people are under. And Africa, I'm sorry, they have suffered under some horrible leadership. They've actually, every now and then, one comes along and is decent. So, Nelson Mandela. Now, let's go back, and I'll read this verse again in Genesis chapter 10, verse 7. And the sons of Cush, Sheba, and named them all Ramah, and the sons of Ramah, Sheba, and Dedan. Go back to them. And this is concerning Tyre. Tyre was also a symbol of Satan's rulership in the Bible. And in Ezekiel chapter 27, and I will read verse 15 and then read verse 22. Concerning Tyre, the men of Dedan were your merchants. Many isles were the merchandise of your hand. They brought you for a present, I meant to change this in the New King James, this is the Old King James, isn't it? Brought you for a present horns of ivory and ebony. Where are you going to get horns of ivory and where are you going to get a lot of ebony wood? Well, you can actually get it other places than Africa, but that's where it's strong. And, of course, now you can't. I actually got a little elephant horn when it was still legal to import them into this country if they were registered. And we have a little one, I think. One of our children has it now, I think. And then verse 22, the traders of Sheba and Ramah traded with you. Now, that's interesting. It lists Sheba and Ramah, not Dedan there. Ramah was the father of Dedan and Sheba. Traded with you, they exchanged for your wares the best of all kinds of spices, which Africa has some spices, and all precious stones and gold. And then in Hosea chapter 2, verse 18 is a promise that I long for Africa. In that day, and this is for all mankind, this is not just for Africa. In that day I will make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, with the birds of the air, with the creeping things of ground. Bow and sword of battle I will shatter from the earth to make them lie down safely. And he's going to take away malaria. You know, there was malaria. When the settlers came from England, first came to this country, and from Europe, there was malaria in the United States. It was in southern United States. But it just disappeared. It's a blessing from God. It just disappeared. And they had malaria in this country. How many of you knew that there was malaria in the... All right, once again, why aren't you up here giving this? You know? Okay. Mosquito. It's only the... And Lucretia said don't take too much time with mosquitoes, but mosquitoes are a great curse in Africa. And, you know, it's... What is it? Every minute or two, something like that, a child in Africa dies from malaria because they have... anti-malaria drugs, but by the time you know it, children die much quicker from it. It's a painful thing, too. But it's only the females that bite and take blood from you. What do the males eat? They're sucking juice out of tender vegetation. And that's where the females get most of their sustenance, is from tender vegetation. But they do... The females will produce better. They can reproduce if they get blood. Some species of mosquitoes can only reproduce if a female gets blood at least every third generation. So I think God will just change that and they will no longer be getting blood. Mosquitoes are important for the ecosystem. They tried to kill off all the mosquitoes down in South Florida at one time back in the Everglades, and it affected the whole Everglades. I mean, they even... It was affecting everything up the food chain, even alligators. So they had to let the mosquitoes live. because you had to have frogs and other things that were eating the mosquitoes, and then things were eating them and things were eating them. So mosquitoes fit into the food chain. And here's the thing, we think of ourselves on top of the food chain. Something almost on the bottom of the food chain is eating on us, isn't it? Mosquitoes. But God is going to bless this earth. He's going to take, all of this earth, it'll be gone. Jesus Christ will return. These people will obey God. Africa, Asia, China, they're all going to obey God. He's going to let the deserts blossom. It's going to be a wonderful thing. And bow and sword of battle, I'll shatter from the earth. There won't be civil wars over there. Horrible. In Moses' time, about 1500 B.C., Egypt conquered Ethiopia, Cush, and ruled it off and on for hundreds of years. However, in Isaiah's time, about 750 B.C., Ethiopia, Cush, conquered Egypt. You knew that, didn't you? I see, he's nodding his head, yes. And the pharaohs of Isaiah's day were black. I think I've got that wrong. I think it's the 25th dynasty. I'll have to look that up. I have to correct. I redid this and I didn't catch all the years. I think it's the 25th dynasty was black. The dynasty that ruled during the time of Isaiah was black. The pharaohs were black men. In Isaiah 18, verse 1, someone sent me an email saying, will you explain Isaiah 18? Well, I'll read a couple of verses out of Isaiah 18. Isaiah 18, verse 1. Woe to the land shadowed with buzzing wings, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, which, of course, would be Africa. You're going deeper south, up the Nile. The New International Version has this a little clearer. The New International Version has the heading of Isaiah 18, Prophecy Against Cush, and translates verse 1 as, Woe to the land of whirring wings along the rivers of Cush. Whirring wings, buzzing wings, just a lot of insects, I guess. Anyway, as so often is true in Isaiah and other prophecies, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, it will say, and the minor prophets that say, I'm going to punish Israel. I'm going to punish Judah. And then I'm going to heal. And that's exactly what he does here, what God does in Isaiah 18. He starts off and he says, I am going to punish Ethiopia. I'm going to punish Cush. And woe to them. But then he's going to turn around and heal them because they're going to turn to God. Because that's what it says in verse 7. In that time, a present will be brought to the Lord of hosts from a people tall and smooth of skin and from a people terrible from their beginning onward, a nation powerful and treading down, whose land the rivers divide to the place, that's where they're going to bring the present, to the place of the name of the Lord of hosts, to Mount Zion. Now these are powerful people. How powerful are they? Well, physically and mentally, very powerful. You'd say, well, I don't know. My parents are from South Carolina. I was an Army brat, so I didn't live there much, but I'd go back there. And the county that I lived in was two-thirds black. And when they were young, just the young men, incredibly muscular. And the young women, strong. But you rarely ever saw a black man 50 and over who had any health at all. They were usually walking. What did they eat? I'll tell you what they ate. They ate, because I actually ate with some of them, but they would take cornmeal and would sort of make a bread with lard. And that was their main food. And people used to make fun of them and say, oh, well, they like moon pies and RC colas. Well, listen, when you're hungry, it's amazing how a moon pie and an RC Cola, you could get them for a nickel, they were huge things, can really take care of that hunger. But you know what it does? They were not getting protein. Even as children, they were not getting protein. And you need protein to nourish the brains. But when you have them getting a good diet and education, they're brilliant. Condoleezza Rice is brilliant. What was the general? Colin Powell, thank you. Brilliant man. Now, Barack Obama is only half black, but let's face it. This man, whether I don't agree with his beliefs, mainly with the one on abortion, which to me is horrible. But the man's incredibly intelligent and personable. And if you go to, are they powerful? Check out the nearest football field, the nearest basketball court. You know, when I was young, they used to say a black man could never be a quarterback of a good team. Now, they just thought, oh, well, they could never do that. Oh, man, what a mistake that was. And then it was, well, could never be the coach or the general manager. What a mistake that was. But they were not given the opportunity. They're powerful people. God could not use any of the sons of Ham because they were strong, powerful. You know, I was amazed that Shaquille O'Neal is a very highly educated man. How many of you knew that? Didn't he get was it a master's or a doctorate he was working on? Some of them, anyway. And are they intelligent? Shaquille's got my back on this. The Shaq has got my back. You know. In that, Isaiah tells about how they're going to bring this this present. Africa desires God. They are very religious. They desire the kingdom of God far more than we do. You know, you go over there and every bus, every truck has got love the Lord on the back or only God can save us and on and on and on. They really are desiring the kingdom of God. The members over there desire the kingdom of God more than we do. If you lived like them, you would too. Here's the NIV, Isaiah 18, verse 7. New International Version. At that time, gifts will be brought to the Lord Almighty from a people tall and smooth-skinned, for a people feared far and wide, an aggressive nation of strange speech whose land is divided by rivers. The gifts will be brought to Mount Zion, the place of the name of the Lord Almighty. These people desire God. They desire God's kingdom. Expositor's Bible Commentary says this. Concerning this verse. Even Greeks like Herodotus. Now, Herodotus was a Greek historian who lived several centuries. I don't remember what century it was. Before the time of Jesus Christ. But it says, even Greeks like Herodotus shared the general admiration felt in antiquity for the tall, handsome, clean-shaven Nubians of Cush. The military reputation they already possessed had been much enhanced by their recent conquest of mighty Egypt. So Herodotus must have been back close to that same time as Isaiah. I don't know. Haven't looked him up. In Isaiah 19, verses 21 through 25, and the Lord shall be known to Egypt. Now, it's not going to mention Cush here, but we're talking about Africa. The Lord shall be known to Egypt, and the Egyptians shall know the Lord in that day, and shall do sacrifice and oblation. Yea, they shall vow a vow unto the Lord and perform it, and the Lord shall smite Egypt. He shall smite and heal it. That's a common thing in prophecy where God smites a nation, then he heals it. He spanks, and then he heals. And they shall return even to the Lord, and he shall be entreated of them, and shall heal them. In that day there shall be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria. And the Assyrian shall come into Egypt, and the Ethiopian into Assyria. And the Egyptians shall serve with the Assyrians. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, Blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my inheritance. Now notice, if you have a highway that runs from Egypt to Assyria, what does it go through? Goes right through Israel, doesn't it? Because Egypt is south of Israel and Assyria is north. And if you run a highway right through it, you have connected the Eurasian continent with Africa. And why would you need a highway? Well, God's commanding them to come up and keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And specifically mentions Egypt, that he's going to deal with them. So it appears that the first ones that finally get the point will be just to the north and to the south. And it will be Egypt and Assyria. So they will have a highway and come to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And notice, blessed be, I mean, does God not like the Egyptians? The Assyrians? He loves them, but they were powerful people. And he could not call them first. Isaiah 42, verses 1 and 4 and 6. So, it's all in here. You can go back and see, am I skipping something important? You check me out. Later, though. Behold, Isaiah 42, verse 1, my servant whom I uphold, my elect one in whom my soul delights. That's Jesus Christ, the Messiah. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the Gentiles. He will not fail nor be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth. And the coastlands shall wait for his law. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness and will hold your hand. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the people, as a light to the Gentiles. So God does love the Gentiles just as much as Israel. Isaiah 49, verse 6. And he said, It is a light thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob. We know a lot in the Bible about calling Jacob and Israel out of captivity at the return of Jesus Christ. So he does that, and to restore the preserved of Israel. I will also give you for a light to the Gentiles, that you may be my salvation unto the end of the earth. Isaiah 55, verses 1, 5, and 13. Ho, everyone that thirsts, come you to the waters, and he that has no money, come you, buy and eat. Yes. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Behold, you shall call a nation that you know not. He's talking about the Word of God, actually. Nations that knew not you shall run unto you because of the Lord your God. And that is, a lot of them eventually, they're going to run to God. They're not going to have to be just pushed and beaten up. After they've been beaten up enough, they're going to get the point. And they're going to run unto them, to the Lord your God, for the Holy One of Israel. For he has glorified you. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree. And it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. Talk about thorns. West Africa, where we tend to go most of the time, does not have the big thorn trees, the acacia and such. But you go to East Africa and go down Southern Africa, boy, I mean to tell you, they have got thorn trees unlike any other thorn trees. How many of you, you've seen some of the, yeah, I mean, these things fall off in little clumps. When we were in Kenya for the feast, trying to think what year that was. It doesn't matter. When we were there, some people donated money so we could take the members on an excursion, because they don't have any money to go to the feast. And we took them down into the Rift Valley. And, you know, it's beautiful there. We got a lot of animals there. And we took a picnic. But finding a spot in the ground where you could sit, you had to go around and pick up these little, they're stuck together when they fall. I mean, they're horrible. I gave this sermon there, and one of the men came up and says, "Boy, I am ready to get rid of the thorn trees and have the fir trees. They are ready for that. And instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree, and it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off." Look at my watch. Isaiah 56, verses 6 through 8, "Also the sons of the stranger that join themselves to the Lord to serve Him and to love the name of the Lord, to be His servants, everyone that keeps the Sabbath from polluting it and takes hold of my covenant, even them I will bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices shall be accepted upon my altar, for my house shall be called a house of prayer for all people. The Lord God, which gathers the outcast of Israel, says, yet I will gather others to Him besides those that are gathered to Him." Just going to keep gathering until everybody's gathered up. Isaiah 60, verse 5, 6. We're going quickly here. Can you imagine people listening to this online? You're going to put this online? I'll tell you what, they're going to say, "Whew, that was hard to catch. Have to go back a second time." "Then you shall see and become radiant, and your heart shall swell with joy, because the abundance of the sea shall be turned to you. The wealth of the Gentiles shall come to you." You know, the wealth of the Gentiles can't come unless they're wealthy. And the Gentiles will be wealthy. Africa has everything needed to be incredibly wealthy if just the curses can be removed and they be given God's law. And then they will be bringing all their wealth. There was a, you may know this, I don't remember when it was. I saw this on TV, don't know if it was the History Channel or PBS, but there was an emperor out of Africa. Where was it, about the 10th or 11th century, that went to Arabia. And he took so much gold and gave it away and bought things that it collapsed the gold market all the way to Europe. You know, I gave this here one. I gave this at a church one time. Somebody came up and told me the name of that emperor, African emperor. How much gold they had then. And they still haven't. You know, Ghana used to be called the Gold Coast. And there's more gold than places other than Ghana, by far. "The wealth of the Gentiles shall come to you. The multitude of camels shall cover your land. The dromedaries of Midian and Ephah. All those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and incense, and they shall proclaim the praises of the Lord." So there's Sheba mentioned again. Now, to be honest, this could be Sheba, who was the parent of some of the Arabs in the Arabian Peninsula. But we don't know. It does mention Midian and Ephah and so Sheba, but it does mention gold and incense, so hard to know. Isaiah 60, verse 11, and speaking of Jerusalem, "Your gates shall be open continually, day and night they shall not be shut, that men may bring to you the wealth of the nations." They can bring it unless they're wealthy. "With their kings led in procession, in my mind I see them coming on now tame African elephants in procession. And the king is coming on one of these huge African elephants with his one wife." Just one wife in this case. And she's dressed in these gorgeous African outfits. Now, I just happen to think that the Nigerian ladies have the most beautiful African outfits. Okay. And most of West African women dress the same, with one distinct difference, that the Nigerian women, they will take their headdress and starch it where it sticks way up. And often it'll be all these beautiful, bright colors, but all matching, you know, that they have, that they're wearing. Just absolutely gorgeous. The other ladies, they're as beautiful, and their outfits are beautiful. It's just, most of them don't, they just weave their headdress, they don't actually starch it and make it stick up. If you ever see that, you know, where it's really sticking up, that's most likely Nigerian. But anyway, their kings come in procession, and then the elephants behind there have all the gold and the silver and the precious stones and such. Isaiah 66, verse 10, rejoice with Jerusalem and be glad with her, all you who love her. Rejoice for joy with her, all you who mourn for her. Isaiah 66, verse 12a, just means the first part of the verse. You can look up the rest if you want. For thus says the Lord, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the Gentiles like a flowing stream. You can only have the glory of the Gentiles flowing if the Gentiles have glory. And they will. Isaiah 66, 23. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another and from one Sabbath to another, all flesh shall come to worship before me, says the Lord. Now, one of my favorite verses in the Bible is Psalm 68, verse 31. You know, you realize that the Sahara Desert is the size of the 48 United States, contiguous. Can you imagine? And they say it's so fertile that if the joke is if you spit, something will grow. And God's going to give rain in due season. And the Gobi Desert. And all those deserts that they have. Psalm 68, verse 31. Psalm 68 is a verse about the coming kingdom of God. Envoys will come out of Egypt. We've already been told that Egypt will be one of the three. But you know who's going to follow right behind Egypt? When they look up there and they see northern Africa and Egypt being blessed. Ethiopia, the Hebrew word is Cush, will quickly stretch out her hands to God. So there's the prophecy of Africa. They will quickly stretch out her hands to God. I like the American Standard translation also. Princes shall come out of Egypt. Ethiopia, Cush, shall haste. It's not just Ethiopia. This is Africa. I mean, the people in lower Africa came from Noah and his sons. So they just kept growing, going south. Shall haste to stretch out her hands unto God. In the Living Bible, which when the Living Bible is wrong, it's really wrong. When it's right, it really does a good job. Like the little girl who was, when she was good, was very, very good. And when she was bad, she was horrid. So Ethiopia, Cush, will stretch out her hands to God in adoration. God hastes the day when these precious people will be called to God. And Africa will quit going hungry and having all their children die of malaria and other diseases.